Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Eric Wetterling, also known as the Hedgeless Horseman, runs the hedgelesshorseman.com website. We'll have a link to that down below. And Eric, it's always good having you on the show just to talk about what you're seeing in the junior resource stocks, how you're investing in your portfolio, and any news of the day that has your eye. I guess just in a general sense, we've seen a continued nice move higher in the metals, then a little bit of a rollover today. And we were talking off mic just about the transitory nature of retail investors and how often we get emails from folks that are asking us about something. And if we talk about long-term value that's being built by a company or a management team or in a project, a lot of people can't help but be whipsawed all over the place by daily price action. I know as a value investor, you look at things from a different angle than what happened to the price today or what may happen tomorrow. I guess let's just start there in a general sense. What are you seeing in these markets? And are you at least encouraged that some of these projects are starting to get traction with investors?
Yeah, I mean, on your first point, I see that all the time, especially when everybody tends to look at silver. I mean, if you look at the 1 hour short for silver over the last 1.5 months, it's basically gone up and down every other day. It's just zigzagging up and down, whiplashing everybody. I mean, you can tell, just read Twitter. If silver is up 1-2%, everybody's bullish, talking about the next target price higher, which makes people want to buy, obviously. The next day, typically, if I had to guess, it's going to be down, and that so far has been the norm. And everybody's talking about the next target on the downside. I mean, it's just unreal how people can't seem to figure out that, hey, obviously this is kind of noise. I mean, how do you build a strategy around that? Because typically everybody buys when they're bullish and sell when they are bearish. Because for some reason, the only focus is always to be right in the short term. That's basically it. And as a value investor, it's like, hey, the whole concept of value investing is you find something you think is undervalued, hopefully significantly undervalued, like we're seeing a lot of juniors all right now because we've been in a 2-year bear market and many are barely off the bottom. It's like if you have a price to value gap of, let's say, 100%, who cares if silver goes or gold goes up 1-2% or 5% up or down? It's like if the stocks don't really do anything other than swing in price. I mean, that gap hasn't closed. So the only thing you can actually, I mean, the whole way of actually acting and taking advantage of the opportunity is to hold it until it is more fairly priced. That is a matter of time. You don't know when, but it's more a when than an if case scenario where there's like there's one catalyst that will be needed for this to all of a sudden be cheap, like a exploration play. That's totally different than just, let's say, strict value investing. The only thing to capture that is to wait and wait and wait until that gap is closed or you find something cheaper. And typically I also like the ones where they're starting off cheap. So you know it's like, okay, I'm just going to hold this. Someday it's going to be more fairly valued than now because we know sentiment drives this sector and sentiment always goes up and down. But sentiment can take, I mean, we can have bad sentiment for like 2 years straight and then maybe 1 year of positive sentiment, yada, yada. But it doesn't change that fast on a daily basis. But if you also have probable growth ahead, you're going to get paid to wait. Because if you hold a stock for 3 years and it grows for 3 years in value, that's even more risk to the upside than the, you know, price to value gap that you started off with, which might be 100%. And after a year, it would be a 125% gap, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like, yeah, okay, value investing, that's buy and hold until it is not cheap. If it's a growth play, value is going to go up as well. So you get paid to wait. I mean, those are my absolute favorite stock. That makes it incredibly easy. That makes it, you know, you can basically ignore the daily movements. Because let's face it, if a company is going to double its value in, I don't know, 2-3 years, even if gold and silver is flat over that period, you're probably going to be up.
Well, let's talk about some growth stocks where companies are advancing their projects. They're doing work on the ground. They're growing resources through the drill bit. They're de-risking projects. We had talked about a couple off mic, but the first one that put out news just yesterday that you were mentioning to me is Nevada King. It had some big drill results, 2.88 grams per ton gold over 67 meters, including 2.95 grams per ton gold over 51 meters. So nice hits for some oxide gold in Nevada. Why don't you walk us through, we had talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but how this continues to grow value at Nevada King.
Yeah, I mean, the Nevada King has put out a bunch of news releases over the last couple of months. And it's like what you want to see in a story. It pretty much gets better and better and better. They're figuring out the system. They're adding ounces. They're infill drilling, you know, upping the confidence, let's say, of what's probably there. And I mean, that Atlanta Gold Mine project, that's still wide open pretty much. So, I mean, I think they're probably going to have at least 1.5 to 2 million ounces of oxide gold, maybe at a grade of like 1.5 grams per ton. You don't find that stuff in Nevada nowadays, really. So it's like, it's actually pretty unique. And then one can't forget, they are the third largest landowner in Nevada. So in my opinion, Nevada King is just cheap already based on what they probably have already at the Atlanta gold mine. Perhaps very cheap in light of that. And that is still wide open in many directions. So I expect that to get even bigger. And then you also get for kind of free an enormous land package to boot. So, I mean, that's a value play for sure, just based on Atlanta gold mine and on the land package, and you have probable growth. So it's like if somebody asked me, do you think this company will be worth more next year and the year after that than it is now? Yes. Do I think it's already cheap based on where they are? Yes. So it's like, yeah, time is on my side in that case. So I would be, in my opinion, stupid to like, oh, you see gold down 2%. Now I have a bearish feeling here. So I'm going to sell this cheap stock with this growth runway and totally miss the whole point of an actual what value investing is.
Well, is there anything that could derail that thesis with Nevada Gold King as far as not getting it to that 1 to 2 million ounces or any potential red flags you see just to counterbalance the discussion?
I don't think I see any red flags, but it's like, could things go wrong? Sure. Do I absolutely know 100% that they will have 1.5 to 2 million ounces, so let's say 1.5 grams per ton? No, but the whole point is that it's like when people, I think, look for too much certainty, like again, with the daily swings, they want to know for sure. They're just going to invest if they know for sure it's going to go up the next day or something like that. I mean, I don't know what they exactly will have. I don't know what the exact percentage chance of success that they will reach whatever target. I simply think it's like, yeah, I think I have a pretty good margin of safety, because like these juniors, most of them will not turn out to big success stories. The few that do, you know, you probably need to hold them for a few years to get that payoff, because let's face it, if there's 5 to 10 value potential, that typically means you need to hold it for at least 3 years or something to begin with. So in the case of Nevada King, it's like, okay, it has a market cap of, I think, like around 127 million Canadian. Is that pricing in a good mine? I don't think so. In Nevada? No, I don't think so. So it's like, what chance of success is priced in that it will actually be a, let's say, a multi-million ounce high-grade oxide deposit? It's like, I don't know, 25%? I think it's simply higher than that. So it's like, I'm not after certainties. I'm after risk-reward. So what I think is that I think it's simply too cheap, given that there are no obvious red flags, etc., and the story keeps on getting better. But what the exact fair value is for Nevada King, I have no idea. I just know that, hey, if this actually becomes one of the better, higher grade oxide deposits in Nevada, I think this market cap is going to look a bit silly.
Okay, appreciate you highlighting that. We just always want to look at both sides of things here and not just be overly bullish. We want to look at the overall picture, but it sounds like Nevada King continues to plow forward with building an oxide resource near surface in Nevada, one of the best jurisdictions. So a lot to like about Nevada King. Let's shift over to another one we were discussing before the call, and that is Dolly Varden, ticker DV, on the TSXV. They've had a series of good drill results. They had done some work at both their Torbrit along the Kitsault vein and also at the Wolf deposit stepping out. But most recently, a couple days ago, Dolly Varde putting out some news from their Homestake Ridge property. This is the property they bought from Fury Gold. And impressive gold results here. 46 grams per ton gold over 25 meters and 1,145 grams per ton gold over a half meter. So some high-grade intercepts in there. But very impressive grades over, you know, the 25 meters is a nice width there at Homestake Ridge. What has your attention here at Dolly Varden?
Pretty much kind of the same combination like Nevada King. I mean, and in Nevada King was kind of unique in the sense that, okay, higher grade oxide in Nevada. And when it comes to silver juniors, I don't know many silver juniors I really like, but like Dolly Varden, they're in British Columbia, which we know is very hot right now. There are like seven deposits, all are open, and they're getting hits like this, for example. So it's like, if they have seven deposits that are open, is there some probable growth there, given that they are cashed up? I think they're fully financed for the 2023 drill campaign. They already have, I don't know, 1 million ounces of gold, like 80 million ounces of silver or something like that. I mean, they're in a pretty unique position. Hecla is a shareholder. Hecla surrounds them. I mean, why would they do that? Obviously, because they like what they see. And I think this is also another story that over the last 12 months, this has just gotten better and better. It's like they're doing step-out holes, finding mineralization, you know, hundreds of meters from where they previously hit. So you pretty much know it's going to grow as well. And again, when you start off with like seven deposits that could grow, I would say the risk of growth in this case is pretty good. And it's like one of the few, I would say, go-to place that have some tangible good margin of safety because they have resources, good grades as well. British Columbia underground, so it's better from an ESG standpoint. Vote of confidence from a major miner. I like Sean, the CEO, etc. And again, if I had to guess, I would think that Dolly Varden will be worth more in a year from now and even more in 2 years from now. And I simply think it's not pricing in that future. And as always, there's risk. There are no guarantees that they will, you know, find a lot more ounces. But hey, I mean, if we go into a silver bullet set, I mean, there are not many advanced explorers with, you know, higher grade silver in a tier one jurisdiction. So I think they're in a pretty unique situation. And if you look at the chart, it's like, you know, I don't own Dolly because of technical analysis, but it looks like we're at a multi-year long resistance zone. So I think, I mean, it might be some, let's say, it might take a bit of buying to break out of here, but I think sooner or later it will. And that would be, I think, a pretty big breakout, which, I mean, is obviously pretty exciting.
Well, just some kind of question on this one. Anything you could see holding it back? I mean, I know that it was at 40 cents not too long ago. Now it's at a dollar. Has it run too far too fast? Or do you still think, based on the drill intercepts they're putting out and the growth of the resources, that the market cap growing that much is warranted?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. And that's the hardest one to answer. And that's basically what I think everybody should do all day. It's like, okay, what is this worth? What do I think the returns are going to be going forward from this price? And also, you know, compared to other stocks, like, is it the cheapest junior out there? No, I don't think so. I don't think it's the cheapest junior out there. Do I think it will have positive returns over if you held it for, like, let's say 1, 2, 3 years? Yes. Would it have better returns if you bought it even cheaper? Of course. But again, also, I mean, there's a reason why it has revalued as well, because, you know, value has been going up with the success with the drill bit. So it's like it makes sense that it has gone up. It's like some people just sell because it's gone up, but it's like, yeah, but what happened to actual value? So I would say it's not the deepest value play out there, but it's like if you like silver, for example, and you like owning something with some margin of safety, with probable growth and potentially, you know, pretty big blue sky growth, who knows? I mean, again, it's like they have a few kilometers of strike to work with. Yeah, I think, I mean, you could do a lot worse than Dolly Varden.
I agree, and I should disclose I'm a shareholder of Dolly Varden, and I do like their probable growth, and I do like silver and gold, so I like the team, I like Sean, but I just want to look at it fairly, and, you know, it has gone up a lot recently, but like you, I believe that it's warranted because they've also been putting out a ton of drill results to show they're growing their deposits. So it makes sense why it's gone up. It didn't go up on no news. It's gone up on solid news. So nice to see that company performing well, but also I think a lot of it is that the drill results are putting the proof in the pudding. So we got one more we want to talk about. That's Aloro Resources. We did discuss this last week, so I just want to touch on it briefly, but they did put out more news, Eric. What has you, I guess, still constructive on Aloro Resources, ELO, on the TSXV?
Yeah, I mean, I just think this is a ridiculous market. It's like, you see the news release, they put up the second best hole they've drilled so far, 202.4 grams per ton AG equivalent over 325 meters, including a higher grade portion, which almost ran 400 grams AG equivalent over 109 meters. I mean, that's a pretty sturdy hole, I must say. But the big thing I think is like they updated their grade shell model. And the previous one wasn't really that old. I mean, September 2022, that's just, you know, a few months ago, let's say. And they grew that by a lot. It's like the strike went from 700 meters to 1 kilometer, width from 650 to 800 meters, depth 810 to 1.1 kilometer. I mean, that's a massive, if you do, you know, the volume, that's a massive volume increase. And if you just, you know, hey, let's say 25 to 30% of that is mineralized around 90 grams per ton AG equivalent. I mean, you can run the numbers. I mean, that's just simply would be an absolutely massive deposit. And it's not done growing. I mean, that's the nice thing. So yes, it's Bolivia. And there's been, the perception is bad for Bolivia, and it's been for Aloro for a bunch of reasons, which I think most of them have been proven to be untrue by now. But it's like, hey, it takes time. And that's what I love about this sector. I mean, anyone who says the junior sector is rational is like out of their mind. It can become extremely overvalued and sometimes extremely cheap. So it's like one of those risk reward scenarios. Like, there is for sure a huge amount of metal there. It's basically looks like it could be one of the largest deposits found in at least the last 10 years, I would say. And it's still open, and they're going to be drilling for a tin porphyry soon, which could be, who knows, maybe another large deposit just nearby. So it's like, it's just, in my opinion, incredible how large the price to value gap here is. And as they've shown how quickly they have, let's say, added tonnage. I mean, the growth rate is kind of incredible, actually. But with that said, it's like, yes, it's Bolivia. So it's not like it's risk-free or anything like that. Bolivia has some issues, but the president has stated that he wants 5 new mines in Bolivia. So it's like, yeah, they're socialist, et cetera, but they seem to be pretty pro-mining as well. How that would play out, I don't know. Am I paying up for this? Am I paying fair value from an economic standpoint? I don't think so. I don't think we're even close. So even if you add the discount of Bolivia, et cetera, I just think it's, I mean, ridiculously cheap. And we recently saw, obviously, the Germana boss, Peter Marrone, buy into the company and coming on as a strategic advisor. It's like, he probably knows more than me about the project and mining overall. So it's like, I wouldn't bet against him, let's put it like that. And if this works, yeah, I don't think I'll be making, you know, 50% returns. I think I'll be making more than that. And that is the risk reward. There's no guarantees that this will be sold to, let's say, a major company. But I think that we're given too good odds, let's say, at this price. That's my 2 cents.
Okay, I appreciate you sharing that with Eric. And we also talked last week about how some people have taken shots at the company for some of the potential penalty metals in the mix there. But we've had Quentin address that a couple of times, and he doesn't think that that's an issue because of all the credits they get from all the different base metals, number one. And number two, like your point, Peter Maroney has a lot more due diligence ability than we have on this call, or that most investors listening to this call have, and looked at the deposit and looked at the project and felt like putting his stamp of approval on it by joining the company. And I think that says a lot as somebody of that caliber coming onto the company when they know exactly what they have in the ground thus far. So we kind of covered it last week, but it was nice just to touch base again on Aloro Resources. Nice to touch base on all three companies, Eric, and always appreciate having you on the show just to kind of share with us the news you're watching, the companies that have your eye, and how you're investing as a value investor.
Thanks, Chad, and the same. And keep in mind, I own shares of all companies and all three are sponsors. So consider me biased. These are just my 2 crazy cents.